Hey there, welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest, this stay in place thing is I gotta get back to work. I'm doing work around the house because I got the time now, and one project's leading to another, and it's becoming all consuming. I spent 2.5 hours yesterday going to different hardware stores looking for stainless steel hinges. I can't find 3.5-inch stainless steel hinges. I gotta get back to work. I can't do this anymore. I'm a performer. I'm gonna laminate myself and just start performing for people anywhere. If you know of any 3.5-inch stainless steel hinges, can you please email me through my website, paulmercurio.com? I'm losing my mind. Also, got the YouTube channel happening. Please subscribe. Want to build that following. Been posting a lot of fun videos there. And my guest this week, really interesting guest that it's the kind of person I don't get to talk to often, and I don't think you get to hear from often, a former Secret Service agent for the president, Evie Pomporis. She's a security expert. She's been an undercover spy. She's interrogated people. It's really cool window into that world, how you interrogate somebody, how do you make sure you're safe at all times, what it's like to be close to the president. It, really cool conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And please check out the YouTube channel. My guest this week, a former Secret Service special agent, part of the protective detail for President Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, former Presidents George Bush, Bill Clinton. She's also the recipient of the Secret Service Medal of Valor for her heroism on September 11th, and has a new book out, Becoming Bulletproof, Evie Pomporis. It's really nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, in New York City, social distancing and trying not to lose my mind. My wife, my son, and our dog, we're all kind of huddled together here. How about you? Are you doing okay during all this?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in New York City as well. So I'm kind of in the same boat as you, trying to be mindful of, you know, what's going on and just trying to keep myself and the family safe too.
Yeah. It's strange when you walk down the street and you're so used to sort of not thinking about having to be away from somebody, and then you see somebody look at you with a dirty look and then get away from you. You start to feel self-conscious, like there's like, do I have BO? And then you're like, oh, I realize, no, this is what we're supposed to do now. It's a very bizarre social interaction that's happening right now.
I know. It's so, especially in New York, because I'm so used to seeing people and cars and movement in the streets. And it's just this utter stillness. I think after this is done, we're so used to now seeing people even with masks on. And so it's going to be weird to seeing people later on when things pass. And I think
know.
It will be some time before we get there, but
you
can see people with no masks on.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's like, I just miss the noise. Like a part of me wants to just go sit in my car and blow the horn, so I feel like I'm in New York City still. It's crazy. It's a bizarre time. Your book is really, really interesting, and I'm fascinated. You have such an amazing background. You're a journalist as well, and you in the book you share lessons learned from protecting presidents, and you talk about. Well, I was curious going in to the Secret Service. You attended the police academy. Did you consider going into law enforcement and that end of things, and then decided to shift toward Secret Service work? Or what was the trajectory in the thinking for you to go into Secret Service?
You know the truth? No thinking. I didn't grow up. I wasn't that person who grew up and knew what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
I loved the arts. I studied the arts. I graduated from like the acting school. I did study political science and fine art in school and college. And I spoke different languages. Law enforcement, I don't want to say it happened by accident because I think it was meant to happen the way it did. Because I grew up in New York City in low-income housing. My parents were immigrants. And we grew up around a lot of crime, a lot of violence. And so when you are exposed to that as a young kid, and then you grow up in it, and as a teenager, you get tired of it. You're like, you know, I'm tired of being vulnerable. I'm tired of having somebody new to come beat me up after school every day. I'm tired of the crime. And I think just naturally life took me in a different direction. I had interned for a congresswoman for a while, and that exposed me to public service and government. And I remember thinking, you know, somebody brought up law enforcement from the office that I worked in, and they're like, you know, you should look into that. And one day I was like, I remember I was on the subway, and I looked at this police officer, the doors open on the New York City subway, and I see this New York City police officer hanging out leaning back on the fences. It was a little different back then. He had like his belly hanging out, you know, big belly. And I'm like, I could do that. And yeah, right. That's right. Exactly what crossed my mind. I was like, I could do that.
Yeah.
I called 212 Recruit and I called him up. I'm like, you guys hiring? And that's kind of how it started. The Secret Service just happened to, I just happened to think of other places, other law enforcement agencies. And I was like, let me apply to them too and just see what happens. Why not? Let them, my mindset was, let them tell me no.
Right.
Let them tell me.
Right. What, so where did
let
you
that
go?
Person tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Why self-defeat? You know, you should put yourself out there in any way you can. And did you have any
do that a lot.
Well, I think you're right. I think you sort of, you know, I mean, it's funny because you said you didn't know. I was in the same boat. I was a lawyer and a banker on Wall Street, and I thought my life was set. And then I started writing comedy and doing comedy, and one thing led to another. And I'm like, I went through a midlife crisis in my late 20s and then left that career to go into entertainment and completely had to start over again. So you really don't know. And a lot of people can say to you, oh, you're crazy. You can't be in law enforcement.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, right?
Yeah. You must have gotten
that,
I'm sure.
To them.
No, absolutely
not.
That's
mental resilience.
Well,
they're mental resilience.
Yeah, they're projecting their own issues onto you and your situation. And, you know, that's just not right, you know. And so I can imagine, I mean, you know, that you were kind of got some people saying you're probably crazy for doing this. And did you have any preconceived notions about the Secret Service when you decided to go in and you were accepted in? I mean, what was it like once you got in versus what you thought it would be like?
Look, after I went through the hiring process, which was super intense, it took about a year.
A year?
Oh,
wow.
Oh, yeah. I know guys and gals, it took 2 to 3 years for them to get in.
Why?
Because it's a small agency, and they are very selective about who they let in. You also have to keep in mind, when you get in, you're going to be carrying a gun next to the most important person in the world. And they better make sure that, one, you're very good at that. You're good at managing your temperament. That you have strong emotional intelligence and decision-making ability. Plus, you, in addition to protection, you just don't do protection. You don't just protect the president of the United States. You protect former presidents. You protect their spouses. And we protect foreign heads of state who come to the U.S. People who come to the U.S. who touch our soil, U.S. soil, we have to protect them from assassination. We don't want anybody getting hurt on U.S. soil. In addition to that, we work criminal investigations. So there's counterfeit, bank fraud, credit card fraud, any fraud that happens, electronic crimes, and we work on different task forces. And there's a lot of intelligence work. So the idea is you are exposed to security clearances and different things. So you want to make sure that when you put somebody in the White House or in these positions, that you have vetted them out very well. So there's the hiring process. There is the physical part of it, because you have to be very physically fit and capable. Of all the federal agencies, this is the one that's most unique, because you have to be able to carry, lift, move, maneuver somebody so that you can save their life. In addition just to the intelligence that goes into doing protection advances and preparing for things. The part of the Secret Service that you see, the individuals that come off the plane with the president or moving him to the car, that is a small part of it. That is the reactive force. That's what's called a shift. The advance is all the stuff, all the planning and preparation that you never see.
Well, you know,
and
it's funny because
they really put so much time.
Yeah, it's funny because I've worked on The Daily Show, The Colbert Report. Now I work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And we've had presidents and vice presidents and heads of state on. And I've seen the advance and the thoroughness, and they come in, you know, meeting weeks beforehand, and then they come in and they do sweeps, and we would get little pins which indicated what part of the building you could be in and couldn't be in. And I mean, it is the level of detail that goes into it. You're right. You just think Secret Service is somebody in sunglasses with an earpiece in, and they're on the tarmac with the president in front of, you know, it was really incredible to see. And did you find that part of it to be interesting, or was it tedium for you, the advance, the planning, and the execution of that plan? What was that like for you?
I didn't find that part tedious. It depends where you went, because you'd go to unique places and you're always trying to figure out. And it's interesting. You don't think like a Secret Service agent. You think like an assassin. And that's how I would think. I'm like, if I was the bad guy, how would I get in? If I was a bad guy, how would I do it? And that is always how I planned my preparation. Mm. I thought like the bad guy, not the good guy. And that I would look for the holes. And it's really, it's like a problem solving thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a huge responsibility because if something happens to him, you are responsible. Did you do everything you needed to do? Did you maneuver everything, plan everything? Mm. And they really hold themselves to a high degree. You don't, because when something were to happen to him, it's not just something happening to the individual. It is symbolic what it means, because if something does happen, it says something about the United States of America. It says something about our capabilities. Like it's going to drop us down a notch in the worldview. Like, look, they can't even protect their own person. And it's so much bigger than just protecting the individual.
Yeah. You know, you talk about in Becoming Bulletproof and in talking about the book, you talk about humility is important. You say knowing that you don't know everything is so important because you've also worked as an interrogator and gone undercover. You say when people think they know everything, that's the moment you become obsolete. I was really fascinated by that. What do you mean by that, becoming obsolete and the humility and being so important?
If I reach a point where I'm like, well, I know everything, there's nothing else to learn. At some point, I will become obsolete because everything evolves. The world evolves, problems evolve, situations evolve, and you must evolve with them. Plus, you also have to realize that you don't know everything. It's an ancient Greek term. I'm Greek, and there's an ancient Greek term I grew up with. It's called know thyself. Mm-hmm. Know what you know and know what you don't know. And it's very powerful. And humility is important because when you go to training or to an agency like the Secret Service, if you go in with this level of arrogance, like, I know this, I got this, you will learn nothing. You will not absorb anything. You will go through this thinking, I know everything. You will not take anything in. Mm-hmm. Learning from other people. And I, like you, I transitioned careers. Mm. I was an agent first, and I did that for about 13 years. And then I went into journalism, into news, into covering national security. And when I transitioned and I began doing the news, I remember there's a moment where I'm like, well, I know how to talk like as an expert, as an analyst, but I don't really know journalism. And I already had a master's degree for my previous career. And I was like, well, I better learn. And I dragged my butt all the way back to college. I went to Columbia University J School. Mm. And I was like, as a grown woman, I was like, I have to learn.
Yeah.
I didn't transition over. I'm like, hey, I'm a former Secret Service agent. I got this. I don't, because I don't know this world.
Right.
And that's what I mean. But a humble person learns. Mm. An arrogant person, a person who's like, I know this all, they learn nothing.
You know, it's really a great point. And part of the book, you kind of give sort of tips and things that people can do in their everyday life based on the experiences and the expertise that you developed. And, you know, you would do polygraphs and you sort of extract from that sort of things that people can do in their everyday life to sort of, you know, assess people, size them up. What is it about, do polygraphs, in your opinion, are they fairly accurate generally? And for you, what are some of the tells that somebody is lying or, you know, skirting the truth a little bit?
Polygraphs are good. They're only as good as the person giving them, if that makes sense. Hmm. Because it's not the actual instrument. That's not the lie detector. It's the person who's talking to you that's the lie detector. I was the polygraph, not the machine. So before I would hook somebody up to the polygraph, so to speak, right? I would spend an hour, hour and a half, sometimes longer talking to them, talking through whatever it is I wanted to know. You spent that time. And while you're doing that, you read people. And there were many a times where I never even had to give them a polygraph, that I was able to get in such communicative harmony with them. And I was able to get them to tell me what I needed to know without even putting them on the polygraph machine. Now, do all people do that? Are all people, people still lie? There's some great liars out there. And there were moments where I would read people and I have this, you know, in-depth training and background. And there were moments where some people I'm like, I don't know, man. Could be telling me the truth, could be a complete lie. And that is those moments. Those are those moments where the polygraph helped, where you connect the person and it looks at your involuntary response, like what your body is doing when it is stimulated, when it is in this reactive force. Now you may say to me, well, this person's nervous. right? That's why you're asking these questions. They're nervous. Yeah, of course they are. But they're nervous throughout the whole polygraph. And you adjust for that. You're like, I know this person's going to be nervous. This is an awkward, different thing. And you pay attention to that. And you look at what the body does. When we lie, we have something that kicks in. It's called the F3. Mm-hmm. And it's our system, our body is arming itself to help us. And so that's when you have a rapid heartbeat, when you're threatened, you start sweating, your hands get clammy. These are all involuntary things. And the polygraph looks at that change in the body. And in certain situations, it will be more heightened than in other situations. And that's where it was really, really effective. Now, can you have someone who's not good at this and do a poor job? Absolutely. And so like our polygraph unit, the unit I came from, was only 30 people in it. And they sent you through really intense training because they wanted to be sure that you were not only competent and highly effective in what you were doing, but that you were also ethical. Ethics is a huge thing because you want someone who's not focused on like, hey, I just need to get information. It's also like, hey, I need to do the right thing, because you can have a suspect in that chair and you could be like, yup, this guy did it. I know they did it. And if you've got that bias, that narrative in your head, you're going to miss all the signals that are telling you that maybe, you know what, he did not do it.
Hmm. Interesting. As part of your undercover work, you talk about the idea of slowing down. You say slowing down and processing things first is really important, I guess, particularly when you're undercover. Why is that, especially when you're undercover, why is that slowing down such a critical skill set?
Because you want to pay attention to how you respond to things. There's a difference. There's two things that happen. Something happens to us. We're stimulated by something, right? There's a stimulant, mm-hmm. and you either react or respond. Those mm-hmm. two are different. Reaction is impulsive. I'm not thinking, I'm just doing. I'm like kind of like all over the place. Respond means I took a moment and I'm thinking about what is happening and what I am doing. So let's say somebody yells at you about something. They make an accusation. Mm-hmm. And then you respond, you react, right, impulsively, like, oh, hey, this guy's yelling at me. I'm going to yell right back at him. And let me tell you how it is. That is impulsive. That is reactionary. And in the long term, that does you no good. But when you respond, when you think, you're like, let me think about this. This person's yelling at me because they think I made a mistake. They misread or misunderstood this. Let me respond intelligently rather than mirror their behavior. And that is the difference. We want to be responsive and not reactive mm-hmm. to what we do. Because when we act, we're just bouncing off the other person across from us. And sometimes the other person across from us is a complete mess. And what happens? We say the wrong thing. We do the wrong thing. And then can you take it back? Nope. Then we cause damage to ourselves. Once something is done, once you do it, it's done. It's out there. So it's about controlling and self-assessing ourselves. And truly, at the end of the day, that is a heightened level of emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And that is one of the things in the book that you sort of point out. And in this undercover work that you did, and is it difficult to contain your emotions at times? Is it difficult not to, you know, sort of let a moment sort of expose yourself? What is critical in sort of keeping yourself safe, keeping the investigation going and not compromising it?
Your ego. This is, you want to know the number one thing that sabotages us in life is our ego. Hmm. We can't get out of our own way. So if I'm working a case and I'm interviewing someone or I'm interrogating somebody and they lie to me, most of the time people will be like, even if I'm not working a case and someone lies to you, what happened? Oh my God. This person lied to me. I can't believe they lied to me. Who do you think you are? You think I'm stupid? What do? We make it about ourselves.
Right.
But we don't stop to think, why did this person lie to me? Is this person lying to me because they think I'm stupid, or are they lying to me because they're worried about something? They're hiding something. Something is going on. And so if I got mad at somebody in the room and I let them have it, two negative things would happen. One, they shut down. They're not going to tell me what I need to know. My interview goes nowhere. And then as a result, I can't solve my case. I can't get information. And now I am completely inept. I am of no use. And I bring that strategy to in anything we do in life. If you're a supervisor or a boss and you deal with someone in that way, are you going to have a good employee, good worker? No. And then vice versa. Or in relationships, we really want to think about how we talk to people and not make it about us, right? Get your ego out of the way and step back and be like, why is this person doing this? Why are they saying this? What are they worried about? What are their motives? What are the consequences they're influenced by? And if I understand those things, then I know how to speak to them in a way that will get them to open up.
That's such a great point about the ego. It can get us in trouble in a lot of ways. The book has got a really, really a lot of great insights that people can use in their everyday life. And I think that's why you wrote it. It's Becoming Bulletproof is the name of the book. Every Pond Porous. We have to do this again because you have a fascinating background and that world is so foreign to me that you worked in. I'm very intrigued by it. So let's do this again soon and talk some more.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and be well and stay safe.
Right, there you go. That's Evie Pomporis. Really interesting. And I just need the hinges. So please let me know if you know of any stainless steel 3.5-inch hinges. And of course, go to my YouTube channel. All right, guys. See you next week.